by a lonely prison wall. I heard a young girl calling. My soul lay a pagan new away. And they stole to my room for my young to see.
What we want to talk about in this first discussion is some of the various concerns and interests of artists and critics working in this country. I think inevitably the questions I'll ask will be from the point of view of someone from outside. First thing I think is to ask some of the people here if they see anything like a sort of unifying sensibility in art that's being made in Ireland. I mean, if we go to international exhibitions and read art magazines, there are ways in which we can see certain Italian art and certain American art, maybe certain German art, as having a kind of national characteristic. I wondered whether there was anything within Irish art that perhaps you could see as being specifically Irish. Dorothy?
I don't think that you could see immediately if you go to an international art exhibition that you would straight away pick out, oh, that's an Irish painting. But I think that over a while, looking at different forms of Irish art, that there is an underlying structural basis to Irish art, which applies not only to Irish art, but to all forms of Irish thinking, in a way, a kind of Irish turn of mind. And that is a sort of abhorrence of closed forms, of absolute solutions. I think that the Irish tend to like to keep their options open and to have a continuing process rather than a centralised sort of final work of art. I think that the sort of linear structures occur all the time, keep coming up again, again, again in both painting and sculpture and in both abstract art and in figurative art. I think it's once you start seeing it, I think it's quite remarkable how all pervasive that is, really.
I think that one of the things that might be remembered here is that exhibition organisers do tend to look for unifying themes in the exhibitions that they organise. I think that the British Art Show, which is a showing in England and in Scotland through 84-85, is a good example of this, where it seems almost in desperation the organisers of this show have attempted to evoke the theme of a literariness, among others, of British art. And I think that there are grave dangers in this, and I think that we here have seen evidence of this over the past couple of decades, where in the absence of a continuous tradition, those involved with the visual arts have tried to evoke such traditions, irrespective of the fact that Irish, or as it's sometimes referred to, Celtic, is a broken tradition. There is no continuous tradition, and that to some extent the whole notion of Irish art is conjecture on the part of those who write about art and those who think in terms of exhibitions. This lack of tradition is surely one of the major problems confronting those of us involved with the visual arts, that we haven't a continuous tradition. And what's more, we look at the international scene and we see a number of countries making it big, as it were, and we too want to get in on that act. We do need some kind of access to international art, and this represents a serious problem for the arts in Ireland.
If I could come to you two as artists and take an example which I've come across since coming here in the last couple of days. The American critic Lucy Lippard has recently been in the country and selected a show of about 30 Irish artists, which will go to America this year, later this year. And in the title that she's chosen for that show, there is a sense of her realisation that there is a great diversity of activity going on here. The show is called Divisions, Crossroads, Turns of Mind. But then she adds a rider to it, Some New Irish Art. How do you feel as being termed an Irish artist?
Well, I mean, if someone calls me an Irish person, that's a very straightforward label, you know. I mean, this is to do with nationality, it's to do with where I was born, but I feel that if someone refers to me as an Irish artist, there's some kind of implication there that I should be doing a certain type of work, or that I might be doing a certain type of work, and I do have a problem with that implication. I think the title of the Lucy Lippard show is indicative of the fact that she may have come looking for something, some unifying sensibility, or looking for something to kind of, some overall theme, you know, that was working in Irish art. And I think there's a great diversity in her selection. And so I have no problem about being in a show like that, because it, for me, in a way, it destroys kind of notions of stereotypes or notions of there being some kind of school of Irish art, because there's so much different stuff in that particular show.
I'd like to come back again to this question of Irishness, which seems to be at the root of what we're talking about. And in fact, I wrote a paper a while ago investigating this very question, and I'd like to read out very quickly a conclusion that I came to, which was that Irishness is not something that can be superficially imposed on a work of art, for example, through the employment of Celtic ornament, but rather that it is something that goes much deeper and is in essence difficult to define. It could be summarized possibly as an attitude to life, or more accurately, a way of dealing with life, consisting of perhaps preponderance to irony, satire, or metaphor, a sense of humor, an enjoyment of parody,
and above all a healthy scepticism. These qualities are not uniquely Irish, but nonetheless the Irish do have them in abundance. And there are sound historical reasons as to why this should be the case. The Irish have been a subject people, sometimes willing, sometimes not, for many centuries. This has meant that in the past, whenever subversive ideas were to be communicated, it became necessary to employ some sort of disguise. For example, the poets frequently used metaphor in order to communicate their true feelings, when a direct statement would undoubtedly have been considered treasonable. Over the years, this technique of saying one thing while meaning another has become second nature to the Irish. I think the problem is that since these attributes are indeed second nature to us, we often fail to take full notice of them. And the fact that proves this is that great Irish artists like James Joyce, Samuel Beckett, were first recognized outside Ireland, and I think they exemplify these very characteristics. So I think that what we must recognize and seek out are these attitudes. And what I'm saying is, for instance, in the area of the visual arts, is that there is not an Irish way of painting, and therefore an Irish school of painting, but there is an attitude that could be considered Irish in an approach to making art.
Peter, as a writer, would you have anything to say about...
I think that the discussion has been very discursive so far, in a sense, in that coming at a kind of an academic intellectual question about a unifying sensibility. In a sense, you can just speak tangentially around those kinds of issues from now till kingdom come. I mean, I think there are underlying social and political reasons why there should be a certain kind of response both within the visual arts and within literature in Ireland. For example, the position of music, which is probably the truest form of community expression, which this country hasn't passed, but which probably is not as prevalent in, say, Britain or in Europe. So that, in a sense, creates a certain kind of a backdrop against which expression can take place. Similarly, in terms of the rural-urban divide in Ireland, which is of a very different nature and quality than that which pertains either in Britain or in Europe again. And responses to those underlying political and social realities are really what the question is about, and not about an intellectual addressing of a question as to whether it is a unifying sensibility or how one can determine what constitutes Irish art as opposed to European art or British art. And certainly what I would hope that would come out of discussions like today is that there would be an attempt to, in a sense, broaden or justify or give credence to the fact that there are particular schools within Ireland, both in visual art and in literature, that are addressing those underlying questions and hopefully, in a sense, trying to... we're at a weekend where we're still discussing condoms in this country. That's frightening. And I would just like to say that in relation to the condom issue, that I don't think condoms are particularly good for sexual activity. And I'll discuss that with Bishop McNamara anytime.
I would certainly want to endorse the view. I
withdraw that statement.
Oh, dear. Where do we go from here, Michael?
Right, well, at least we haven't cracked.
As an Irish mother,
could we get back to the abstract notion of structures, social and political structures? I would certainly wish to align that view. That what we ought to be talking about really are the social and political structures of this country, which might in a sense give a particular kind of outlook from visual artists, rather than to look to national characteristics. I think that this is very much more to the point, really.
Well, I think the reason why so many debates are going on in Ireland at the moment on concepts of cultural identity and Irishness and all that is the very reason that we seem to have lost any real sense of independence, both politically and culturally and economically. And it's ample evidence, these constant debates are ample evidence of this fact, and I think that must be addressed. I think later on when they'd be talking about the ROSC, which was a major exhibition last year, and this is one of the reasons why there was so much controversy over the exhibition, was that these very issues came to play a part in the development and the selection of that exhibition.
I wouldn't think that it's so much that we have lost the independence, but that we're only really beginning now to come to a sort of realization of cultural independence at all. And I think that is something that happens fairly commonly in post-colonial situations where the sort of independence comes first, and afterwards it takes an awful long time to shed the sort of colonial influences and particularly to achieve any kind of confidence.
Well, it depends on the structures you build up after independence. Like Nicaragua had a social revolution in 1979, and they seem to have no problems of national cultural identity at all. They are discovering again their own painting, their own culinary arts, all these sort of things, and because of a particular road they have chosen, which is a positively independent role.
But don't you think you could say that in fact happened in Ireland, say in the 1920s, where people thought, yes, we have Sean Keating painting the men of the West, this is true cultural independence, but in fact it was a mistaken idea of cultural independence. It was really basically very superficial, and in fact was continuing a sort of Royal Academy tradition which had nothing to do with Ireland at all, or with Ireland's past, however disconnected.
Yes, but again, to quote Nicaragua, their art that they are developing is based on a traditional art form that has existed there for many years. It's not something imported, which, the as you quite rightly say, the academic art was imported into Ireland, and because the subject matter was sensed as being Irish, namely West of Ireland landscapes and thatched cottages, it was assumed it was Irish. But just because you use Irish subject matter doesn't make what is basically an academic art form necessarily Irish.
But surely it's too late to shed those kind of influences. I mean, the economic influences, the political forces that act on Ireland now, you know, they are impossible to shed. I mean, it's like, I think in that notion of Irishness, there's some sort of yearning for, you know, for some perfect idea of Irishness, and it's also like a regressive notion. I mean, you can't share all the influences that have been brought to bear in this country now, and it's...
I think there we're going to have to leave some of these issues to be discussed after the interval, since our time is up. Thanks very much indeed to all of you for coming up and discussing. Thank you.
traditions where that I'd be based.
First of all, what I'd like to sort of open up this debate with is a discussion about the ROSC that has just taken place. So the hope is that in this discussion we can actually view it with some sort of clarity and some perspective. I'd like to start off by asking how, in fact, ROSC was conceived and how it was seen in relation to the international context of exhibitions such as Documenta, Venice, Sydney and the Paris Biennales. And perhaps Patrick Murphy would sort of respond to those particular ideas about ROSC.
Well, ROSC, Bill, started in the 60s. It was started by Michael Scott and a small group of friends who were particularly interested in contemporary art and felt there wasn't an opportunity in Ireland for the public and the artists generally practicing in Ireland to see outstanding examples of contemporary art. And there were a number of ROSCs. The first one was 1967 at the RDS, and another one in 1971. I missed that one because I was living abroad myself at the time. And after the second ROSC, I think it was generally acknowledged by many critics abroad that if you wanted to see what was happening in contemporary art, you had to go to Dublin see it.
Right. What about the specific rationale, then, behind the latest ROSC, the one that you were chairman of the committee for?
Right. I took over in 1981 as chairman from Michael Scott, and it was a time of change in the committee, so new members came on as other members retired, and we set out to put on a very important exhibition of what we consider the most important artists of the last 4 years. Now, we made a policy decision, I suppose, to confine it basically to painting and sculpture.
Right. Okay, well that's a sort of a fairly specific statement about what you set out to do and about ROSC. But could we now move on and just perhaps discuss how it was critically received within Ireland itself? John, do you want to talk about that?
Well, I can't see how you can actually have a policy which says we're going to confine this to painting and sculpture, given that those two areas have, well, would hopefully have been eroded in this sort of hierarchical importance they've had for the last, well, for this century. I think in the 70s those sort of that erosion took place, and to me that this year's exhibition was extremely reactionary in that sense, that it went back to a consideration of painting and sculpture somehow being more important than a lot of other areas of art activity, which to me are an awful lot more interesting than the type of very reactionary male work that we saw in ROSC this year. And I'd be very interested to see why, or to know why, that policy was arrived at.
I think that's another point worth picking up on, that it was so heavily male-dominated. Out of 53 artists, you had four women, three of whom were Irish. And perhaps it's an indication of the kind of high-profile women have had in Ireland in the art scene. But in generally, internationally, they also do have a high profile, whereas we had very, very few women on it. It actually led me to look back through previous ROSC catalogues to see if this was the case generally. And it was extraordinary. You look back at 67, you had 51 artists, three of which were women. 71, 50 artists, five women. 77, 50 artists, all men. 1980, 50 artists, six women. So it's just extraordinary, you know, even in the light of the past history, that it somehow wasn't looked to and readdressed in some way during the past ROSC.
I wonder if I could come in to defend very briefly on that by saying that, number one, when we decided for the 1984 Ross to confine it to painting and sculpture, it was because we felt that the various trends of the 70s had been very well represented in Ross Gatie, and therefore we felt that we should move on from that. And number two, we weren't conscious of male or female or nationality or any other consideration except the quality of the artist and the art until the end.
We are going to actually pick this one up, but I'd like Noel Sheridan to also respond to this question.
Well, just the kind of exhibition that Rusk is, I think Pat's described how it was when it started. It was meant in the 60s to bring art to Ireland for people who perhaps hadn't seen it. The same was true when the American art came to England. What did happen, though, was you got an increasingly sophisticated audience in Ireland. Now, certainly for the art students and that, it was interesting to see the work perhaps they'd seen in magazines, but by then their own analysis and sophistication in relationship to it, I think, brought a different perception onto Rusk. What is unique about it, I suppose, is that it's all done on a kind of voluntary basis. Normally shows like this are heavily funded, have planning for 2 years, and professional art administrators. Now, it's vulnerable to criticism, if you say, of businessmen like Pat and other people who give their own time and put it together. But in a funny way, that brings it through. Obviously, it's open to criticism on that level. The criteria of the selection, I think, were established once the first decision was made to make it a collector show. Campanza was chosen. Fritz Beck, inevitably, you were going to get that choice. In the case of Panza, you got minimalist art of the 60s. In the case of Beck and others, you got the new painting. And that wasn't determined. We should show a contrast between the 60s art and the 80s. It just happened. And that was one of the interesting things that came out of it. It's a movable feast, it seems to me. And it seems to pick up whatever money is available in a four-year period. Inevitably, in this discussion, you're going to get back to not enough resources, everything being attempted in the one project. We have no useful museum of modern art in this town. There's just nothing there. If you go over, people are polishing the brass or something. It's just no art. So that it has to bear that weight as well to bring in.
I just wondered whether we're in a situation here with the Rusk that's just happened, which is that it had to be like that or it wouldn't have happened at all. That is
not at all. No, I think it's a reflection just of the particular prejudices of a group of people who, I mean, I would very much question the idea of why collectors in the first place should be allowed to select an exhibition which uses such a vast amount of public money and private money, which might have produced a much more interesting exhibition. To me, there's a certain amount of abuse of power involved there. And given the very conservative nature of the exhibition which emerged from that, I find that very questionable. And I don't think it's a matter of sort of we didn't care whether they were men or women, or we didn't care what medium they were working in. I think, you know, the prejudices are very obvious. 39 male artists and one woman artist represents what's happened in the world in the last 4 years. It's absurd. And yet it's something which is being defended.
I wonder for whom Rusk was intended. I mean, leaving aside the quality of it and so on, the real question is, who's it for? And Pat mentioned the fact that people would come from England to look at modern art here. I doubt if the public here really got a great deal from it, other than that it was an event. I'd say for many of the artists in Ireland that is in fact discouraging because of the scale of the work and the way in which, you know, it's likely to be sold in an open market. And I think there's a real problem for the future Rusk as to how they should go about it. I think there's a good argument for looking at thematic approaches to the arts rather than simply looking at cross-sectional selections of odd pieces of work of maybe 50 artists. And it's very hard, even for critics, I think, to get an assessment of the value of the work. For a public such as ours who have no background, certainly in schools and in the education system, we don't have very much background, to come to the visual arts, such as we've seen in the last number of Rusks, and really benefit from them, other than an event for a day out that you could talk about as such.
I think it would be a far greater benefit to establish a contemporary collection of Irish art, to put the 20,000 that the Arts Council build up every year towards Rusk, to put it to starting a contemporary Irish collection, and in on top of that try and organise smaller international shows, perhaps thematic, but instead of this, you know, enormous undertaking of the great big international exhibition, which is an absolutely daunting task.
Sorry, I just wanted to sort of move it on to the next question. We're running out of time, which is, in fact, to do with representation. And I suppose it's always going to be a contentious issue if you import a very large exhibition of any sort into a country. And talk about the representation of Irish artists and other groups within such an exhibition. And I think it's probably futile to pull percentages out of the air and say there should be 25% or 30%. I just wondered how, Irish artists felt about this whole issue, you know, the value of being contextualised within such a show, the value coming off the attention paid to their work being seen in relation to such an international show. And you're rightly saying that people come from all over the world to see it. How do you think artists should be represented? And we're talking now about thinking about the next ROSC. I mean, it seems to me something one can't forget about until someone notices that there aren't any Irish artists. Surely it should be some structural consideration from the outset. Because otherwise, it seems to me it could be very damaging that there's no visibility of local art, in a sense, or the art taking place in the country that is host to the international exhibition.
I would agree with that, I think, and the various ROSCs have different selection groups, collectors, art administrators, and so on. There should be one that's chosen by artists, let's say a group, and particularly by Irish artists, inviting people, let's say, they admire to come over. I make no bones about politically and tactically embedding yourself into something as prestigious as that. One of the things, it all seems to be happening to us. Mm. Here comes all this stuff, the art community has a grip on it, but it's kind of competitive, and yet there's no dialogue, no seminars, no real way to reach it. But for the general community, it's even bleaker. It looks like some kind of circus has hit town, and you go there, and it's confusing, and all your prejudices are very often confirmed. Like, this is some kind of rip-off scam connected with this. That's worth £60,000. How could that be worth it? And everyone's worst fears about contemporary art can be confirmed.
In fairness, I should add that 63,000 people paid in to see that exhibition. And when Ciarán says he doesn't know if the Irish public got anything out of it, over 40,000 were young people from schools and unwaged people. So they came, and there was a reaction. There was a very positive reaction.
I don't dispute that at all, Pat. I'm just saying what they actually got out of value later on. My experience is that they've enjoyed it and some of them didn't. But in terms of actually forming their visual judgment, I really do wonder. And I don't think that's Rusk's fault. I mean, this is the point I'm making. And I think what's happening is that Rusk has been featured as a symptom of a problem elsewhere. And that's the issue.
Not necessarily, no. I think that you could have put on an exhibition which would have interested, particularly it mentioned children and the general community, other than sort of what was basically, if I had the money, this is what I would buy, which is what Rusk ended up to be. Objects which you can buy, nothing to do with sort of the activities that most contemporary artists are actually involved in. It was just ignored because it's either too political, too feminist, or whatever the rationale behind that work might be. Forget that. Let's just have a load of lads up there who produce nice objects.
Two more points that we have to get through very quickly to stay inside our 20 minutes. But one is the responsibilities of actually staging and presenting such an exhibition, which is that it's going to be seen as fairly definitive statement of what contemporary art means. And we're talking about anyone who comes to the exhibition, the public, the children, the schools and so on. And I can see something of a danger that one can't escape. Perhaps it's not seen as a danger, I don't know, but whereby if you exclude a number of factors such as what one might feel was an adequate female sort of proportion, work that doesn't perhaps conform to painting, sculpture, and so on,
that you are, in a sense, defining what art practice is and what it means to be involved in the activity of making art. So I think there's a sort of danger there that perhaps one should be aware of. I don't know whether, you know, that's something that you want to respond to.
Well, it's just that we were very conscious of this, yeah. And we had to make choices. We decided to go with the format of previous Rusks in confining it to approximately 50 artists. And within those 50 artists, we had to address what we thought were the outstanding movements of the previous 4 years. And we believed, any of the selectors believed, the outstanding work to have been done in Expressionism and in the sort of people who came out of minimalism and conceptualism of the 60s and 70s. And therefore, we chose on that basis. And it wasn't on a female or male basis, and it wasn't on a national basis, as Venice and other places, Sao Paulo are. It was purely on the quality of the work, and not the work that we would buy ourselves either, but the work that we believe to be the outstanding work of its time. The artist to begin with, and then the examples by the artist we could lay hands on.
But all of the work involved came from the Western capitalist world, and I don't see how you can say, you know, that is quality. You know, you're completely ignoring any work that's produced in Africa, South America, or the entirety of Asia, and saying, well, this is what the quality is, and the quality happens to be produced by men, happens to be all white. I mean, I think that's a very prejudiced notion of what quality is.
No, I really have to respond to that, because in the course of my business, I travel to South America and Africa very regularly, more than once a year. And I'm very familiar with art, as I see it exhibited anyhow, in museums and in private galleries where they exist. And I just felt that, I personally felt, and the other selectors agreed with me, in going for the outstanding 50 artists of our time, artists from those particular regions didn't qualify in 1984.
Right, thank you very much.
Hey! I was walking with my son Brendan, who is now grown up and has his own son, and he was walking along. We were just, it was a summer's day, walking along idly, picked up a Ginny Joe and he blew it, and it was an easy soft day, you know, and it just wafted away in the breeze, and it struck me with the force of a blow that I'd cast him into the world with as much abandon as that he had blown a Ginny Joe seed, and I made a song about it, and I'd sing the song. Where will you be, my blue-eyed son? Oh, when your daddy's races run, when your sire his song has sung, where will you be, my little one? Where will you be, my black-haired son? Oh, when your daddy's time has come, when no more the flesh I heed, where will you be, seed of my seed? Ginny, winds will blow, carrying you onward, your seed to sow, while dying dandelion lie on the earth below. Your mother pushed you from her womb, and your bed cry echoed through the room, through heart and mind, and then passed me to echo through eternity. Ginny Jo, winds must blow, carrying you onward, your seed to sow, while fading dandelion lie on the earth below. I am the tree, leaf, branch, and root, and whose hand shall gather of my fruit? For flowers must blossom to fade and die. Cast seed on the wind and reason why. Sure.
All right, let's start this resurrection, and for what we're about to receive, may the Lord make us eternally grateful. We're living in the United States.
They hit you. Now. We all live in the United States, whether it's by choice or by mistake.